From sprains to fractures, get expert care quickly at the University of Kansas Health System. Walk-in orthopedic care is open weekdays, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 to 2, at I-435 and Null. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services. Walker Medical Linen specializes in bed linens, towels, scrubs, and lab coats. Family owned and operated for over 140 years. Find out why hospitals of all sizes, surgery centers, and medical clinics trust Walker Medical Linen. Online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Last night after the Titans beat the Green Bay Packers, this is an interesting tweet, I thought. The Titans improved to 7-3, joining the Chiefs and Dolphins as the 7-1 teams in the AFC heading into the weekend. No other team in the AFC South is even at 500, and so ESPN Analytics has the Titans' playoff chances improving to 90% after last night. So the point of that is, you know they're going to be in as a division winner. It's going to be very interesting to see these matchups when we get to the AFC playoffs because, again, while I don't think they are capable, I mean, I guess they could, but I don't like their chances of winning three games and getting to the Super Bowl. I wouldn't want to play them in the opening round. I would not like to see that matchup.
You will not have to.
Thank you. I don't want to.
Division champs do not play each other.
Good. So, I mean, I'm just talking about anybody. I would. That's. They're a tough out.
Oh,
that's
you're
a,
saying yeah. anybody?
Yeah. That's a. Like watching them last night. Tannehill just always holds it back. There was a 27-17 lead they had, and the ball was almost in field goal territory, and he just threw a mind-numbing interception that he just on a play action on second and one that he just didn't have to throw, you know. And I don't think when they're down, if they get down, he's the type of quarterback that can bring them back in a playoff atmosphere against a playoff quality football team. But I think they're good enough to win a game or two. And like you know, I think their ceiling is what we saw the other couple of years ago when they got to the AFC Championship game against the Chiefs, and the Chiefs put it on them in the title game. But where would you put them? In the AFC, as far as the rankings or how you view the teams in the AFC,
well, you got to ask me what category are you talking about? Making it to the Super Bowl, like which who do I think will make the Super Bowl, or
just,
who's
just power rankings,
solid, who's good, and
however way you want to.
Tennessee,
you
week
it.
After week, I respect the heck out of Tennessee and what they bring, and they're hard out. They match up well with teams like Kansas City. In one game settings, because they're physical.
He's a terrific. Vrabel's a terrific coach.
Yes, he's got enough Belichick in him and belief in that, but still a different way of doing things. Derrick Henry, if he goes off, they have an answer to be able to run the football. So I really like Tennessee, but I don't think they're in the elite. The Chiefs are the best team in the AFC. The Buffalo Bills should be the second best team, but right now they're leaking oil. Josh Allen's beat up, and he's making bad plays. So he's got to refine his confidence. I think he will by the end of the year, but they're in a tough division. They may not even win their division if they mess around much more. In tiebreaker terms, they're the third position team in their division. Miami, super dangerous in a one-game setting. I don't think that they're a great team. Belichick, I think that they have a good chance of making the playoffs just because they'll just keep grinding and fighting and finding a way. The Ravens are a little bit like Tennessee. You like what they do. I love how John Harbaugh runs his program, but they don't scare me in the playoffs as far as winning three games in a row. So with Buffalo sliding right now, you have a lot of teams that are going to have trouble putting together two straight wins in the playoffs to even think about three. I still believe in Cincinnati. I think they're the dangerous team. I don't know if they're going to get it together this year. You know, just because they did it last year in the playoffs doesn't mean that they're ready to take that next step. But if they do, that's someone the Chiefs need to worry about. So Miami's dangerous. Buffalo's at the end of the day, Buffalo's going to end up being the second best team. They're going to bounce back. It's early enough in the year where they've got a flat tire. They're on the side of the road. They're scared of playing in the snow. Come on, man. Why aren't they playing at home this week?
Yeah, like how bad is this snow? Is
it thunder snow?
Thunder snow.
They're predicting it that accurately already? I mean, did Gary Lezak tell them they're going to have 6 feet of snow? And why can't we play football? I want to see a game in the snow.
Right. I love snow football.
They're going to play in Detroit, by the way. And then they're going to play in Detroit on Thursday. So Bills Mafia can head to Detroit for a two-game stretch within 4 days. I think Buffalo will bounce back. Miami's dangerous. I don't think the Jets are ready for prime time. New England will just be so feisty. The Ravens are not a playoff team because they can't throw the ball. I mean, they're not a winning playoff team because they don't know how to throw the ball. Think about that. The Ravens are better than Cincinnati day after day, each practice, each game. Put me in for the Ravens. Put me in for the Titans. But in a playoff game in the NFL, you got to throw to win. Put the Bengals ahead of them.
The Ravens are going to have a high seed because I've been talking about this for the past month. Their schedule is just nothing moving forward.
So they win the division.
Yeah, they're going to win the division, I think.
So just think about that. If they win the division and Tennessee wins the division, Kansas City wins the division, who is going to come to Kansas City? Are they going to get the number one seed in the bye? Probably so. So that changes the dynamics. They'll play the best team that wins in the worst team left in the wild card round. So will the Cincinnati Bengals be coming into town? Will the Miami Dolphins be coming into town? The Buffalo Bills. I mean, the game's going to be hard. The Chiefs playoff game. Hopefully they'll get one advancement by being the best record in the AFC and get a bye. But it's going to be challenging because the teams that are going to win the division are really not as good and as dangerous as the teams who are going to be wild cards. Does that make sense? I'm more worried about the wild card teams than the division champions because Baltimore and Tennessee are solid programs that aren't great. They're not going to win a Super Bowl.
And could be the Bills,
I know. I mean, the Bills in Kansas City, first game.
Yeah, how about that? I mean, it's possible. So, yeah.
Would you rather play them or Miami?
I think I'd rather play Miami, but I don't say that as a person who takes Miami lightly at all. You know, here's the thing about it. What you just said, this just bears repeating over and over and over again. What we're looking at right now could be totally different in 2 weeks from now.
I'd rather play anyone than Buffalo.
I mean, yeah.
I have no problem with that.
Yes. That's the last team I
want
to play.
You want to have Buffalo with a worse record than the Chiefs, right? So you get a bye,
sure.
And you get a home game.
And if you play them at Arrowhead.
Aren't you hoping they win the division so they aren't a wild card team coming in right away?
Right. If I have to see Buffalo, I want it to be in the AFC Championship game at Arrowhead.
Right. Right.
Although I'm just going to tell you, if the Chiefs go to Buffalo for the AFC Championship game, I'm picking the Chiefs. Okay, because the Chiefs are for some reason better on the road than at home. And they've been a fantastic road team under Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, and they've never doesn't that blow your mind though? They still haven't played a road playoff game with Patrick Mahomes at quarterback. Isn't that wild?
No, it doesn't make any sense.
That's unbelievable to me.
After all those years, getting championship games in your hometown is crazy, and the Chiefs have done it 4 times in a row.
And it's happened in some weird ways.
Yeah.
It hasn't just been the Chiefs
cruise to Miami beating New England.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, well, and then like, you know, the number one seed's losing in the
Tennessee,
playoffs
last year.
Yeah, so and wasn't it the Ravens the year that they lost to the Patriots in the AFC Championship game? I think it was because the Ravens lost at home. I'm trying to remember.
So I guess you hope the Chiefs get a bye, and then you're going to play the worst team left who play on the first weekend. Okay, so that's some pretty good teams, no matter what. You hope that the Jets or the New England Patriots pull off an upset in the first round. That's the perfect scenario. Jets or New England at Kansas City after the first week,
those
the second weekend,
are
and then you're going to win. And you have to win one game to go to the Super Bowl, one legit game. But if the Jets or New England don't come to Kansas City the first time they play, then it's game on. You got to win two real games, home or away. I'm telling you, Miami, Buffalo, Cincinnati, if any of those teams come into town, get ready. It is going to be a heck of a playoff game. And you just, you know, or you root for the Chargers. But you don't want to mess around with the Chargers because division foes play you closer.
Yeah.
If you're 14 points better than a team, but all of a sudden you say it's a team in your division, Suddenly you're only 8 points better than them. They're not intimidated by playing you.
I want to know.
They strategize against you all the time. They draft.
Yeah.
But I don't believe in the Chargers at all. I mean, what we're finding with Justin Herbert is fine talent, but the same thing he was at Oregon. Just like, where's his passion? Where's his demand that he has to win? He kind of just goes out, plays, doesn't give up. He'll fight to the very end. It's hard to not like him, okay, but he isn't going to win.
So why? Because the Chargers are always a very popular pick in the preseason, and then many of their marquee players end up getting hurt. Why do they have so many players? Why do they have so many problems with injuries every year? Is it just they're unlucky? Because Derwin James is hurt a lot. Keenan Allen is hurt a lot. Bosa gets hurt a lot. I mean, all their key players are always ravaged by injury. Is that an organizational problem? Is it just bad luck? There's got to be something. Because right? I'm not every single year.
And then they draft an offensive tackle, he gets hurt.
And people explain away, well, the Chargers would have done this, but they just had too many injuries.
Cornerback hurt. I mean, it is unbelievable. Oh, yeah. And there has to be some level of randomness. But if we really dug deep and tried to come up with a philosophy that might answer this question, because injuries, it's a crazy world. And now what's called an injury was not called an injury 20 years ago. You know, Keenan Allen's over there on the sideline or whatever. Well, it's better to rest you for 3 weeks and have you come back. That was never the mentality when Marty Schottenheimer was coaching. He's like, get your butt out there on the field.
So you can't make the club in the tub.
But I think I will look at this. I don't know much about, you know, what the general manager's doing, but Brandon Staley, come on. He has held them back tremendously as a head coach. He's not even in the same league as Andy Reid. Mr. Analytics, a little dude that should be playing soccer with Nate.
Wow.
I mean,
wow.
I was down on the field when he walked by, I go, that's the head coach? I mean, anyway.
Would you like to play soccer with Brandon Staley?
He's in shape, man. He was running.
Yeah, he
you'd love it, Nate. He was
around
running around the field before the game, yeah. You know, 2 hours before, getting his run in and freeing his mind up and all that and getting his analytics straight. Anyway, there's an organizational attitude, I believe, with the Chargers that just allow for a lack of toughness. And when you start on day one not demanding toughness, and that's a lot of football nowadays does not involve toughness, okay? I like how football's advanced, don't get me wrong, but you still deep down have to be tough. Like Andy Reid, deep down, is tough as nails. I mean, this guy won't put up with any crap. He wants physicality. Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
Andy Reid still's old school, even though he tries to package it completely differently. He's found that great balance. But with the Chargers, I'll present this to you. When the Chargers were at their best, let's say 2 years ago, they were dangerous coming on, right? Herbert was accidentally put in as a starting quarterback right before the Chiefs game, and he lit it up. And they got a running back, Eckler, who catches passes as well as anybody in the NFL. How about Bosa? But here's what I'll present to you. How many times do you see late in the game as a team's driving down the field in critical situations, they cross the 50-yard line, and Bosa raises his hands up and walks over to the sideline because he's tired? That's not toughness.
Yeah.
If Chris Jones does that, if Chris Jones in a critical moment, you know, here come the Buffalo Bills, down by six, coming across the 50-yard line, down to the 38, first down. If Chris Jones raises his hand up and says, I'm tired, and comes out, I will want to throw up. That's what the Chargers do. The Bosa does this all the time. He goes and gets his sacks and makes his elite plays, and he's dangerous. But when the game's on the line, he's exhausted.
Both the Bosas are hurt a lot.
He's on the sideline. There's something in here. Toughness is not a part of the Charger scheme. Where do you see toughness anywhere in that group?
But can I also say, because when there's all these injuries, you kind of start to lose the benefit of the doubt. They did have a team doctor 2 years ago puncture their starting quarterback's lung right before the game. At some point, I get the medical center, what in the hell is going on here?
I was with everybody.
Right? If that's just like an isolated incident, then you start to wonder, who's doing what over there?
So, yeah.
You just got to walk by a player. There's got to be toughness, man. When you walk by a player and say, I want you to do what the doctor says. I want you to do what's best for your body for the long term. But you look at him, you need to have piercing eyes, man. I am so disappointed in you.
Yeah.
Are you really a football? When Andy Reid walks by and says, "How you feeling? I hope the doc's taking care of you. I don't know when you're going to be ready. I want you to do the right thing." Do you know what a player with the Chiefs thinks when Andy Reid's talking to him? Like, that dude is so disappointed in me that I'm not out there.
You know what every
I want to be out to practice as soon as possible. Because he's not – on the old days, he'd cuss me out and call me less than a man and all that the stuff they used to do. Now you just look at him. You got to have that eyesight and just let him know, "Son, hope you feel well. Get with the doctor." And they go, "Oh, I don't want to let Andy Reid down."
Almost every player I've asked about that with Andy Reid, they compare it to like letting your grandfather down. We talked about this. Like in my life, in my world, my dad was one that would cuss me out. You know, "I'm a used little son of a mama." But my grandfather would, you know, he would just be, you know, "Mijo, I'm disappointed in you." I'm like, "Oh, that just broke my heart. I don't want to let my grandfather down." And they had that kind of respect for Andy Reid, like they don't want to let him down. Just like you said, just by a look or just by they have that
respect,
right?
Fear. I thought you played Travis Kelce on that podcast,
yeah.
And his brother Jason, right, said, "Hey, why don't you ask Patrick Mahomes to come on the show, right?" And he basically was like, "Yeah, I'll get to that. I'll be able to do that. I think he may do that." And then you know that whole story. Then he goes, "What about Andy Reid?" And that's when Travis Kelce is like, "I don't know how I could possibly go ask that man."
Right. That's a tough ask.
That's perfect, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Travis Kelce lets it fly, right? He's a good dude. He would be the one person in the NFL, as long as he's been with the Chiefs, and the establishment that he has about what he's done and how hot he is this year without Tyreek Hill around, he would be the one person in the world. I mean, Patrick Mahomes and he would be the two guys who I think could go ask Andy Reid, "Did you hear what he said in the podcast?" It's like, I don't know if I could do that. I don't know how I'd ask him. That is the level of respect, grandfather or fear, that you got to have. Like, Travis is totally comfortable in his skin. He'll dance. He'll run routes however he wants. He'll do all those things because he knows Andy Reid supports him. But, man, there is a certain line where he goes, "That dude is powerful. He's the coach. There's a respect, a fear." That is what a great coach needs to have. And I think the Chargers, you know, I think when they go out to practice, they roll out the soccer ball and say, "Hey, coach, you want to kick this a while, or you want us to throw some passes around?" You know, just there's no demand. If Andy Reid were the coach of the Chargers, I don't know. I just believe that one-third of the guys who are injured would be out there practicing.
Well,
does that make sense? I mean, maybe I'm being too mean to the players.
What do I always say when we argue with Jeff Chedia or anyone else that might not pick the Chiefs in this division? It's very simple. Who has the best head coach? The Chiefs. Who has the best quarterback? The Chiefs. All right, Chiefs win the division. Nate Buchanan.
So a couple things. The game that you're talking about, and I think it was the same game, and I hope I'm not running them together, but I think it's appropriate that the game you were talking about when they put Herbert into the game, when he wasn't expected to be, was the game in which Tyrod Taylor had his lung punctured by their freaking
team
doctor.
Yeah, that's why it happened.
And that's why he got into the game. That also, I believe, was the same game when the Chiefs had the ball in the fourth quarter to go on the game-winning drive. Bosa was on the sideline because he had an injury of some sort. But it wasn't like some kind of injury that was like, "Oh, he tore his ACL. There's no way he could possibly play." It just seemed like he had an injury. And I just remember the image of the guy that you've got everything invested in standing on the sideline in the most important part of the game is not a great image. I think it can be both. You know, I think that part of Andy Reid's, the respect that he has from his players is they all believe he's putting them in the best position possible to have success. All we hear from anybody is, "Boy, Rick Burkholder, you got one of the best in the business there." And I'll go back to the Royals had a serious issue with injuries for a long time. And remember, Randy Gisarli wrote this big, long piece like comparing all the injuries to the other teams and how long guys were out, how often they got hurt, all this stuff. And he was like, "And they've got the oldest, most antiquated training staff in the American League, and they need to update and overhaul that. They need to get better at it." It's, you know, certain teams invest in things. Some teams invest in having the best guys that are studying everything, and it doesn't mean they're going to get everything right and that they're not going to have a rash of injuries every once in a while. But there is, like, That does matter. It does matter if you have a good training staff. Back to your point, though, I don't know if you can find it, Marco. Maybe it's. But I was watching. I was watching Sunday Night Football. I don't remember which show I was watching on Sunday. The Titans had just beaten the Broncos, and their kicker got hurt during warmups, and some other injuries had happened. And Mike Vrabel gets in there, and they always like to show the post-game speech that that the coaches give the players when they're all huddled together. And Vrabel goes, "All right, guys, we're going to have to rest up quick. We got Thursday night game in Green Bay. We'll find out who's coming with us. And we'll go, you know." And it was, and he, I can't say it in the same way he did, because he didn't make a big deal out of it. He didn't say, "We'll find out which wimps aren't strong enough to come with us." But he did say it in a way like, if you're not coming with us, you're basically irrelevant. That it was just like, it was in the tone of his voice and the way he said it was one sentence, but it was like, "We'll find out who's with us." And it was, and it's like, and the whoever the, you know, the commentators were when they went back to the studio were like, "That's Mike Vrabel right there. He's making it clear the only guys he cares about are the guys who can be able to go play that weekend. He's not going to run around calling the other guys all wimps, but they just don't matter to him. They're completely irrelevant until they come back and play." And that's, I think that's kind of that. It's obvious that the mindset of the Tennessee Titans is, we're going to be tougher than every other team out here. That is their brand. Like, and the Chargers brand is, well, we got a lot of good players, and we have a fancy stadium in Southern California, and sometimes we show up and play, and we look really good when we do.
All respect to the medical community. There's a lot of people listening to us, and everyone hears things differently. I just want to point out, anything that I just said about the Chargers, I know I'm no medical expert. Okay,
right.
I have. So my comments are not really about, are they really injured or not? I'm just saying toughness, football toughness on the field, and sometimes decisions you make to get on the field. Hey, I'm not a medical guy. Every injury, I'm not blowing up their staff at the Chargers. I just don't know. But toughness is not a part of the DNA of the coach or the Chargers football team right now. And you can just see it out on the field. That's why they're not going to beat the Chiefs. I mean, they could beat the Chiefs in a one-game setting. They're dangerous. They got athletes. They're going to fight and claw. And division games are always harder. Like this week, Sunday night, the Chargers might play the Chiefs to a very close game. I will not be surprised, because they know how to match up with the Chiefs. They know how to get fired up, how to cause problems. They have a good philosophy and strategy. Their backs are to the wall. They need to win this game. But I do not believe in the Chargers. They do not have the proper toughness that Tennessee does, that New England does, and Buffalo's starting to build.
Yeah. What was the biggest play of the Chiefs-Chargers game earlier this year?
The interception. The pick six.
And why did it happen?
Because he caught the ball.
Because that tight end just got so tired.
And then he ran.
Didn't run his route.
And then he ran to the end zone.
No.
And it was a touchdown.
No, the guy who caught a pass for
Gerald Everett,
40 yards?
Yeah. Yep.
I was there. He's raising his head. I'm tired.
He tried to sub himself off.
I want to come out at the 6-yard line or the 2 or whatever. I'm tired.
Isn't that when you go, "I'm scoring this touchdown"? He tried to sub himself off, and then he just didn't even run the route because he was too tired.
He just went out there and stopped, and he just killed Herbert.
Chargers is that?
Yeah. But hey, Bosa does it. You know, if you give me 55 plays of Bosa, he's going to make dominant plays. He's a great NFL player.
But will he
do it in the time when the game's on the line, when he's tired? I haven't seen
it. But, like, if you see one of the best players do it, then the other players think, "Okay, well, I'll do it too." Right?
Exactly.
That rolls downhill.
Yeah, and then the coach over there, do you think he demands respect from the team, fear? You know, and then he does stupid stuff like analytics that make no sense.
What do you really think of Staley?
Is he the fourth best coach in the AFC West or not? That's
no,
a tough question.
No,
he's not. There's a worse one in Denver. You want to talk about
Josh McDaniels is worse than him, too.
I was reading a book about Tom Landry.
He's the second best.
And it reminded me that Paul Hackett was not a good coach. Paul Hackett, I could go on all day about Paul Hackett. I could go on about what I believed about Paul Hackett. I knew Paul Hackett was not a good coach.
Oh, because they wouldn't run the effing football in the playoff game against the Colts? Even though the run game was gashing the Colts defense, they kept thinking, let's drop Bono back and see if he can throw another interception.
Sorry. When Tom Landry tried to say, "I'm going to make some changes in the 80s, he brought in Paul Hackett. And then I told you I have certain theories. Here's one of my theories. Just because you know someone and you hung around them does not mean that you have their excellence. Okay, Paul Hackett hung around Bill Walsh. And so when the Cowboys hired Paul Hackett, they thought, remember Bill Walsh was turning it on in the early 80s, Joe Montana, West Coast offense, you remember all that?
Oh, yeah.
Paul Hackett was a subordinate.
Yeah.
And so, hey, we hire Paul Hackett, and then I learned, and I was pretty young then, I go, just because Paul Hackett knows Bill Walsh does not mean he knows anything about what makes Bill Walsh great.
He didn't soak it all in.
One of my big theories, just because you work with someone does not mean that you are able to carry that on. So he comes over, and Tom Landry allows him to run the Dallas Cowboys offense, okay, for about six games. And all of a sudden, he pulled it back. In midseason, Tom Landry's going, this is the dumbest thing ever. This isn't working. Doesn't make any sense. He didn't let anybody know, right? But Paul Hackett kind of quietly left the Dallas Cowboys. But by mid-year, Tom Landry's back to the Dallas Cowboy way. And so Paul Hackett got moved around, ended up in Kansas City. Well, his son is a diluted version of Paul. Paul's better than his son as a head coach or coach. And is he the 32nd best coach in the NFL? Or are you going to go with Jeff Saturday?
Josh McDaniels.
Josh McDaniels
is worse than Daniel Hackett.
First time around, and now
which one? Who's the fourth best in the AFC West? Who's the fourth best coach?
This game on Sunday, the Battle of Suck. It should be a lose or leave town match between the Broncos and the Raiders.
Hey, look, real quick, this was Vrabel. This was Vrabel after the game. Marco found. I think this is going to make Stan's heart warm up a little bit.
Okay, I'm going to tell you, congratulations. Okay, but all this team does is know how to win.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I don't care what happens. Okay, I don't care who gets the touchdowns. I don't care who makes the sacks. And I know you guys don't either. Okay, because you guys will fight toe-to-toe with everybody in this league. But you know how to win, okay, and you know how not to quit. You know how to win and you know how not to quit. But everybody's got to just continue to do a few more things a little bit better. Starting with me, okay, getting the details. Short week. We know what it is. Okay, get your ass to call one and get in bed by 10 o'clock. Okay, because we're going on the road on a short week. Okay, and we're putting a lot in. Okay, celebrate this, man. Okay, guys made mistakes, and you came back. The same guys made some plays to help us win. Okay, that's everybody. That's the attitude.
Hey, man, that's what a family do right there. We battle to the end, man. Stick together.
That wasn't the clip, Marco. Wow.
What? That's what I found.
What was the clip you were looking for?
That was everything except for the part where he goes, we'll find out who's with us. That was that.
Oh, you cut that part of it out?
Yeah, that was the only part that wasn't in there.
Oh, I thought you wanted the F words.
Is that the very end?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
That's a Tennessee Titans social media team right there.
They
I thought it was still all good.
One note here. Bills have canceled practice today due to the weather. The players and coaches will meet virtually. And then somebody that I follow that lives in Buffalo just tweeted, I hope the Bills have a secret passage to Detroit because I can't find my mailbox.
Wow.
So apparently it's
that lake effect.
Yeah, it has to be unbelievable. Yeah. But I was looking forward to a snow game that just was unbelievable. Epic, right?
But I think they're probably doing it more for fan safety that they can't even
get
there.
Yeah, the workers can't even get there to help clean out the stadium. It's just a dangerous situation to invite any of the 70,000 out. It's just, it's social policy. Like, it's bad. You just can't, from a governmental point of view, say, we need workers and fans come out and watch the game because they should not be leaving their homes.
Right. And there was
they should be looking for their mailbox.
Like, Chiefs fans, they're such great fans. They'll do whatever they can.
You didn't answer my question. Who's the worst coach in the AFC West? Who are you going with?
I think Josh McDaniels is right now. But
okay.
I'll,
so you get Hackett before?
He's
third.
That
makes Staley the second best.
Yeah, Staley's the second best, for sure. Absolutely.
He's the second best coach.
And that's
in the
not
AFC
a ringing endorsement of Staley. It's just, but I think the only reason I say Hackett's third is because I haven't seen him totally fail, and maybe there's some upside there. I know Josh McDaniels is no good. I knew that when he was with Denver, and for some reason they brought him back.
So if your team had a choice of those two coaches, you would take Daniel Hackett.
This is a terrible case of scenario right here.
Can you believe how easy the AFC West is? Can you believe
how good everybody thought it was going to be?
Forgot about who the coaches were. But we didn't know Hackett was going to be this level. I mean, there was at least some naive hope that he would.
Yeah, I mean, I was arguing with Jeff, man. I brought it up. The coaches' mismatches in this league were right there for everyone to see.
You were as high on the Chiefs all summer long as anybody.
But it's just because it's like...
I was doing the polls. It took me like 3 weeks before I said Chiefs are going to win the division.
But I feel
before
like
I
you...
Just said, when the Chiefs... 2 weeks. When the Chiefs beat the Chargers on Thursday night, I said Chiefs are going to win the division.
I feel like you about Staley, And then I don't understand what's the Raiders, but I don't understand why. Like, why would you hire McDaniels? Why are you doing this? And then I just thought, well, heck it, even if he's good, he's a rookie head coach, he's not going to outwit Andy Reid. And so, and then you got the best quarterback. We'll take a break. Back after this on WHB.
I think his play tick went up from, I know in this last game, and we had talked about that during the preparation week last week. Yeah, he certainly deserves that. You're right. He's played well. He stands out. You know, of course, anytime you get a sack, everybody starts to notice. But he's done a lot of other good things in the run game that have really helped us. But I like the way Colin has progressed and played this year.
That was Chiefs defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo talking about the improved play from defensive lineman Colin Saunders, who has 2.5 sacks in his last 3 games. So before we move on to college football, just real quick, Stan, I was talking about how excited I am to see the, even though, hey, look, this is all Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, that's why the Chiefs are the best team in football. But I am excited now because the Chiefs finally have all of their components defensively together. Because they lost Trent McDuffie right away. Willie Gay Jr. had the 4-game suspension. Frank Clark all of a sudden started to play really well. Then he has a 2-game suspension. They've had some injuries. But now everything's together. All the young corners are together. They've got their linebackers where they want it. Leo Chenal has looked better. Colin Saunders has been improved. I love the way Carlos Dunlap has played. You know, I know they lost.
Chris Jones is playing at a high level.
Right. Turk Wharton was a big loss, even though he doesn't, you know, show up in the box score. But besides that, what's the ceiling of this defense, you think?
Well, I think Spagnuolo's defense will get better as the year goes along. I think that's a trend that usually occurs, and I think it will. The upside is it could be pretty high. I mean, I just think the Chiefs, if they had a better-than-average defense, then they're ready to launch themselves into the Super Bowl championship, because I think they've been playing with defense that's average and kind of hoping it gets hot at the right time, like it did the year they won the Super Bowl. So there's definitely some improvement. I don't think the Chiefs can just act as if they could put pressure on the quarterback down after down. When you play the elite teams, you know, let's just say Joe Burrow's back there. Here's what happens when Joe Burrow drops back. He either gets pressured real quickly and gets crumbled in for a sack, or he gets that extra half second and delivers a perfect ball downfield for a completion. The Chiefs don't match up well with forcing him into many bad plays. So if you're playing the Bengals, what about Tua? Remember, we talked about, if you listened to us earlier, how dangerous some teams are. What will Tua do if he has time? So I'm still concerned. I'm not advancing the Chiefs' defense to say they're ready to match up with these teams that can really throw the ball, because I don't know if they can pressure the quarterback. But some of their NASCAR packages where they come in and change things up and put a bunch of defensive ends out there. And then Chris Jones moves out to the defensive end. He's been a good third down pass rusher out on the edge. He's also created the havoc he needed to as defensive tackle. Willie Gay can blitz. Nick Bolton cleans things up. When teams try to run a draw or a screen, he goes and makes big plays. That helps. I think McDuffie is really going to be good. The physicality of the Chiefs defense is at another level. I've got arrow pointing up, Steven. I think the defense is getting better. I think it has good components, but if you ask me, if we're talking about the elite championship level, I still will have concerns about how much pressure will they be able to put on the quarterback in the championship game of the AFC and in the Super Bowl. That could be the limiting factor.
All right, let's get to college football. Kansas State destroyed Baylor last weekend, and now they play at West Virginia. And if they can win on the road against West Virginia, it looks like we'll be headed to a rematch between TCU and Kansas State in the Big 12 championship game. Will Howard is the quarterback. We know that now. And so tell me how Kansas State just totally dominated Baylor, and then maybe what your level of concern is going on the road to take on West Virginia.
Well, the discussion that we had, and we really started talking about it most focused is with Danny Klinkscale on College Football Game Day tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Last week, we started talking about Baylor and saying, you know, they can run the football. They're really good at running the football. They were hot. They'd won three straight games in a row. They'd won a couple games on the road. They were picked to be the champion of the Big 12, so they're starting to find their way. Their quarterback, Blake Shapen, was throwing the ball with more effectiveness. Their defense was playing better. What about the game with K-State? Well, you said the thing that it seems to cause K-State some problems, even though they're good on defense, really good on defense, if you can run the ball, that's a good way to attack K-State. And here comes Baylor, able to run the football. But the thing that I made a distinction about was when you look at TCU's Kendry Miller, the physicality of the TCU offensive line in the running game, and obviously with Bijan Robinson at Texas offensive line, they've got some freshmen that are unbelievable when they want to run. But those physical backs playing against K-State's 3-3-5, remember, K-State has five defensive backs. They don't have three linebackers in the game. They have an extra DB, and they're good at getting to the angles. They play smart. But are they big and strong and can handle the physical game, finishing off the tackle down after down after down? I thought that was the difference. Baylor has a great running game. The most veteran line in all of college football, a bunch of six-year guys, starters forever, but their backs weighed 170 pounds. And I said, I think K-State can play the speed game, meet them on the edge, find the right run game fit, and then finish off the tackle, knock them backwards. And if you do that, Baylor's receiving core is transitioning out. They're not as good as they were last year, and Blake Shapen's still a developing quarterback. I said it on the air with Wyatt, double or nothing. If Baylor can run, then they're going to be able to throw because their play-action game is elite. But if they can't run, the play-action game isn't going to work, and you cannot throw the ball against K-State when they know you're going to throw. Does not happen. When K-State stuffed the Baylor running game, it was game over. And in the 20 times that K-State has met Baylor in the history of their program, and a lot of them were early when Baylor could hardly score and stunk, this is the fewest points ever scored by Baylor against K-State. Three. And other than the first drive of the game, it wasn't really close. K-State dominated. So they matched up with that running game very, very well. And in all offense, you know, K-State's just rock solid. They got Deuce Vaughn, who I still think is the best player in the Big 12. He's an elite receiver out of the backfield. He can run the ball up the middle. He can run splash plays. He picks up the blitz. And he was a little beat up a couple weeks ago. He's actually healthier than he was two or three weeks ago. So he's back to hitting his stride. Eight receptions, just dominating. So Deuce Vaughn's unbelievable. The K-State offense, Colin Klein has them rolling no matter who the quarterback is for K-State. And the defense, if they know you're going to pass, they will shut you down. Stuffing the run against Baylor was a key. It's all about the matchup. Those running backs were not physical enough to make K-State pay.
Nate Buchady.
All right, so now you go to West Virginia. And West Virginia is like a lot of these teams in the Big 12 where if you watch them on a given day, you might think, well, they're not going to really offer much of a challenge to K-State. But then you watch them on another day, and they have some really good wins on their resume in Big 12 play.
At home.
So how you talked about the matchups. I think that's such a big point. What one team's strengths are versus another is makes it really hard to do comparative scoring in the Big 12. Because you're like, well, that team beat that team, but then they lost to that team. It doesn't make sense. So matchups do matter. So what do you think of the matchup? How does K-State match up with West Virginia?
Well, being at home is going to be helpful to West Virginia. The other thing about matchups is the psychology of the human being. They had a long run of beating K-State, four or five straight games, until last year. K-State won the game. But until then, West Virginia has been beating K-State. So when they walk out in the field and warm up, the West Virginia players are going to believe. Neil Brown's 2-1 against the Wildcats. The AD got fired this week at West Virginia. There's talk about the head coach is going to go down. The players will probably fight. You know, at 4-6 and a win over Oklahoma last week was a great boost to their confidence. It's senior day, so they're going to play for their coach who's maybe going to get fired. They're going to play for an opportunity for bowl eligibility. They're going to be excited about playing a team ranked as high as K-State and a team that they've beaten before. So I think you're going to get the best of West Virginia, which is good enough to beat Baylor. They were better than Baylor the whole game in an exciting game, and then they beat Oklahoma last week. So there's no limitations in their minds to how good they can be. That said, if you just took this game and put it on a neutral field and played down after down, day after day, game after game, K-State matches up very well with West Virginia. West Virginia has a good receiving core, but can they get the football to the receiving core? Their quarterback, JT Daniels, actually was at Georgia last year, started three games for Georgia last year, part of that national championship run. Steven, you're monitoring that. He is a freshman, was a starting quarterback at USC.
Missouri tried to get him in the offseason.
So this kid is thought to be at a high, high level. But they are not confident in his play, and the fans in the team is excited about Garrett Green. Garrett Green's a guy who scrambles around, fights, throws his body on the field, and will do whatever he can to win. He ran for over 100 yards. He sparked them last week against Oklahoma. But that isn't going to work against K-State. You cannot have your quarterback scramble around and think you're going to beat K-State. So if they start Garrett Green and play him all day, K-State will win. They have to have JT Daniels. I think they'll use both quarterbacks and try to find that niche to when to use which quarterback. It's hard. For West Virginia to win, JT Daniels is going to have to play one of his better games, throw the ball to these really good wide receivers, and then run the ball second. Because if they try to run the ball, it'll be, I believe, like it was against Baylor. K-State will match up with their running game and shut West Virginia's run. If they come out trying to run and do quarterback scrambles with Garrett Green, K-State will shut them down, and then they won't be able to throw either. So I think they have to throw the ball first effectively, then go back to the run, have all that home field advantage matter, make a couple plays, ball bounce their way, right? I mean, that happened when last time K-State went there. The ball bounced crazy ways for West Virginia. But K-State matches up very well. And the thing that West Virginia used to do, guys, is play great defense. They were so underrated on defense. They would stuff the run and force you to pass. And they got a player, Dante Stills, who's in his fifth year of eligibility. His brother, Darius, was a superstar with them as well. He's graduated. His dad, Gary, was an NFL player for the Kansas City Chiefs. This guy might be the best defensive lineman in the Big 12. Yet when the game unfolds, they don't stop the run. You run right past him. I'm not sure what's wrong. My buddy Vic Koning was a defensive coordinator who was with Neil Brown at Troy. This is kind of an underrated story. Those two guys together were the yin and the yang because Neil Brown's a smart young guy. He's only 42 years old right now. He's kind of an intellect into analytics and all the modern ways of doing things in an offensive mind. And Vic Koning, who we've had on College Game Day many times, he's been the head coach at Wyoming, is just the opposite. He's country, man. He is old school defense, right? Those two guys together made it hum at Troy. And then when he went to West Virginia, the same thing happened. But Vic Koning got caught in a political correct thing. He said something to a player at a meeting. The player said something to the administration, and they fired Vic Koning or allowed him to leave with a payoff. Vic Koning hasn't been a defensive coordinator now for 3 years. They're becoming more and more diluted. They don't play great defense. West Virginia is not in a good situation. Other than being at home and fighting for Neil Brown, if the ball doesn't bounce their way, K-State is better than West Virginia and matches up very well with them.
Do you think what kind of chance do you give Kansas of beating Texas?
I give Kansas a big chance to beat Texas. Texas will be asleep. They're going to be so disappointed. Cold weather. You know, they're going to have extra layer of clothing out there. Kansas, you'll see the linemen all showing, you know, their skin. And you'll see Texas wearing double layer. Will Texas get mad and play hard? Let me tell you, when Texas is focused and playing their best, they're the best in the Big 12. Does that make sense?
Yes.
When they care and they want it, they're the best. But what hurts them is Quinn Ewers is not ready for prime time. He's a highly rated quarterback, but he's no Arch Manning. Arch Manning's going to have a free run to be the starting quarterback when he gets there. Ewers holds him back. What was his completion percentage against TCU in a close game? I mean, less than 50% in modern football. If Texas wants to pound the football and play to their highest level, then they're better than Kansas, and they're better than everybody. When they played Alabama toe-to-toe and were the better team, when they played K-State in the first half, oh, my gosh, those first three drives, wow. They were good, but Ewers was completing his passes. Then he leveled off, and fortunately they had a 21-point lead against K-State. So right now, Steve Sarkisian is just I like him. I mean, I've gotten a chance to know him. I interviewed him when he was the BYU quarterback, when K-State played them in a bowl game in the Cotton Bowl. I like him, but look at his record, guys. I mean, he's not been a dominant coach at USC or Washington, and right now I think he has a below 500 record in Big 12 conference games. So point is, this is about Texas. Kansas will play hard and consistently. They're playing with confidence. They've never gotten tired of putting it all out on the line. They're great on offense and not so good on defense. Kansas will play at a high level and test Texas. Will Texas want it bad enough to go win the game? Jeez, I wouldn't trust them. Kansas got a big shot.
Nate?
I mean, I'm glad to hear Stan say all this because I I think right now I'm kind of caught up in the way the Texas team looks coming off the bus. You know, and the size they have up front on both sides. And when I watch them and they...
When you watch them come off the bus this time, look how many coats they have on.
I told Steven this earlier this week. The colder the better. You know, the colder the better. Because I've been on the sidelines when KU's played Texas. And they'll bring their fancy heated benches. You know, they've got those that they pack on their bus and all that stuff. I hope for all that.
Stan Weber, thank you so much for the time, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
That's right. We'll be right back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's talk to Nostradamus. Let's talk to the amazing Kreskin. Does anyone know who the amazing Kreskin is? Google it.
Gary Lezak?
Let's talk to Karnak the Great.
Good morning. What are you talking about?
You know what I'm talking about. Don't play with me.
You.
So last
Karnak night, the Magnificent.
Last night, the final score of the Tennessee victory over Green Bay was what?
What was it?
27-17.
Why is that significant?
I don't know. On yesterday's show, on your show, while Nate was packing his bags and heading back to Kansas City.
Yeah, Nate had his head up his ass at that point.
Well, Stephen was not listening, but we've got evidence. I think we've got the clip. Let's listen to this. Remember, the final score was 27-17.
No, because I remember because I told you that Garrett Dieter and I both liked the Packers, and you said you liked the Titans, so I do remember that.
Okay, let's listen. Let's listen to the clip. So Tennessee over Green Bay tonight. I'm going to go against you guys. Final score of tonight's Thursday night football game, Tennessee 27. Green Bay only scored 17 points.
Why, you son of a gun. Well, when you're done with 41, that's what you need to do.
See?
You need to become a gambling insider.
See, there you go. Weather insights, weather is a factor, you know? And also, unfortunately, Aaron Rodgers' decline. I feel it's weird. It's like Tom Brady I'm worried about, but, you know, of course, the Rams helped Tom Brady's entire season. That was a very bad ending to that game for the Rams, not for Tom Brady. But anyway, these guys are getting old, and Aaron Rodgers missed a few big passes that very rarely do you see that. And Tennessee, 27-17 victory over Green Bay.
Well, you see it a lot this year, Gary.
Really?
Yeah. He's played like garbage this year.
I don't know.
And it looks like he drives a white van.
I think so. It's
a kidnapper's favorite kind of shoes, as right. We learned.
Oh, my goodness. So, hey, this weekend, the Sunday night football on KSHB 41. How many Sunday night football games have we had?
11.
Wow. It doesn't seem possible.
Seems like it. My gosh. Thank you, Patrick Mahomes. My goodness. This is just amazing. But, hey, big game. You know, Herbert's coming to town. The Chiefs have – it's going to be – you know.
Well, if Herbert comes to town, then he's going to be in trouble because the game's in L.A. if he's in KC.
He's coming to his town.
Okay, there.
Yeah. I mean, the Chiefs are going to – there's going to be a lot of Chiefs fans in that stand. In those
there
games,
you go.
Yeah, we're going to be loud.
We are.
We'll do the Arrowhead chant. And, do you want my prediction for that game?
Oh, I sure do.
Okay.
Boy, do I.
Yes.
The Chiefs are going to beat the Chargers. It's going to be a struggle. It's actually going to be closer than I want it to be. But the Chiefs will score 31 points. The Chargers will score 23. That's it.
That's a cover. That's a cover.
That's a cover. Another cover.
Ring that cash register for Marco.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Did you know last week that Marco sent Gary Dieter 6 picks?
Unsolicited.
And he was wrong on all of them?
No way. He was 0-6.
He went 0-6.
And so. it wasn't like Gary was like, hey, Marco, give me some picks.
He just sent him some picks. Just like it's a proving ground.
Marco's not saying a word. Over sex.
That just means he's due.
Shame.
Oh.
Shame.
Oh, poor baby.
Shame.
Oh, my gosh. 31-23. So, there you go. My goodness. The weather in L.A. will be fantastic. Here in Kansas City, we're looking at sunshine. Today's high, 27. The coldest, November 18th in our history, was 29. So we may set the cold lowest high temperature for
today. Yes, sir.
What about this weekend, Gary?
You want the forecast of this weekend, Gary?
I sure would like it.
Yes, sir.
Okay, sunny tomorrow and a high of 34.
Okay.
Sunny on Sunday, a high of 45.
Hmm.
Monday, 55. Tuesday, 60 degrees.
Wow.
Yeah. Wednesday, 58. Chance of a few showers, rain or snow showers, and then the 30s to low 40s on Thanksgiving Day. Oh, my gosh.
Oh.
Yeah. So there is your forecast.
Thank you, Gary.
How about one more thing? Chris Jones with eight sacks in 9 games. What do you think about that?
He should be in the conversation for Defensive Player of the Year. Now he needs to finish strong.
Yeah, he does. He needs to finish strong. Let's get 2 sacks. All right, this weekend. All right, go Chiefs. I'll be listening. Welcome back, Nate. We missed you. I know you were still on, but we still missed you. Your live presence is just fantastic.
Wow.
I miss you, Gary. Thank you.
Oh,
Chris Jones has 7 sacks.
He only has 7?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Nah, 8 sounds better. Whatever.
Maybe he's going to get 2 and have 9 by the end of this week.
Maybe.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Gary Lezak on Sports Radio 810 WHB.